And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's May 24th, 144th day of the year. 221 days remain till the year's over with. The war in Ukraine still rages on. They just lost 87 people in the ruins of a building in Mariupol. And the Russians have lost almost 20,000 last time I heard numbers. Well, on this date, 919, the nobles of Franconia and Saxony elect Henry the Fowler at the Imperial Diet in Fritzlar as king of the Eastern Frankish Kingdom. 1218, the Fifth Crusade leaves Acre for Egypt. 1276, Magnus Ladulus is crowned king of Sweden in Uppsala Cathedral. 1487, the 10-year-old Lambert Sumnell is crowned in Christ Church Cathedral in Dublin with the name of Edward VI in a bid to threaten King Henry VII's reign. 1567, Eric XIV of Sweden and his guards murder 5 incarcerated Swedish nobles. And that's considered dirty pool, frankly. 1607, 105 English settlers under the leadership of Captain Christopher Newport established a colony called Jamestown at the mouth of the James River on the Virginia coast, the first permanent English colony in America. I had ancestors there. 1621, the Protestant Union is formally dissolved. 1626, Peter Minuit buys Manhattan. I think he got taken in that one, having lived there for 3 years. 1667, the French Royal Army crosses the border into Spanish Netherlands, starting the War of Devolution, opposing France to the Spanish Empire in a Triple Alliance. 1683, the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, England opens as the world's first university museum. 1689, the English Parliament passes the Act of Toleration, protecting dissenting Protestants but excluding Roman Catholics. 1738, John Wesley is converted, essentially launching the Methodist movement. They celebrated annually by Methodists as Aldersgate Day, and a church service is generally held on the preceding Sunday. 1798, Irish Rebellion in 1798, led by the United Irishmen against the British rule, begins. 1813, South American independence leader Simon Bolivar enters Mérida, leading the invasion of Venezuela, and is proclaimed the liberator. 1822, the Battle of Pichincha. Antonio José de Sucre secures the independence of the presidency of Quito. 1832, the first kingdom of Greece is declared in the London Conference. 1844, Samuel Morse sends the message, "What have God wrought?" That's a biblical quotation, don't you know? Book of Numbers, chapter 23, verse 23, from a committee room in the U.S. Capitol to his assistant, Alfred Vail, in Baltimore, Maryland. This inaugurates a commercial telegraph line between Baltimore and Washington, D.C. 1856, John Brown and his men killed 5 slavery supporters at Pottawatomie Creek in Kansas. '61, American Civil War, Union troops occupy Alexandria, Virginia, which is right near Washington, so that was no big deal. 1873, Patrick Francis Healy becomes the first black president of a predominantly white university in the U.S. 1883, the Brooklyn Bridge in New York City is open to traffic after 14 years of construction, and it immediately went on sale. 1900, the Second Boer War, United Kingdom annexes the Orange Free State. 1915, World War I, Italy declares war on Austria-Hungary, joining the conflict on the side of the Allies. 1930, Amy Johnson lands in Darwin, North Territory, becoming the first woman to fly solo from England to Australia, left on May 5th for the 11,000-mile flight. 1935, the first night game in Major League Baseball history is played in Cincinnati, Ohio, with the Cincinnati Reds beating the Philadelphia Phillies 2-1 at Crosley Field. 1940, Igor Sikorsky performs the first successful single-rotor helicopter flight. Well, also in 1940, acting on the orders of Soviet leader Joseph Stalin, NKVD agent Iosif Grigorievich orchestrates an unsuccessful assassination attempt on exiled Russian revolutionary Leon Trotsky in Coyoacan in Mexico. NKVD was the forerunner of the KGB, and Trotsky had become a newspaper reporter. He was one of many who fell out with Lenin, and he was forced to leave the country. But Stalin also always viewed him as a threat. 1941, World War II, in the Battle of the Atlantic, the German battleship Bismarck sinks the pride of the Royal Navy, the HMS Hood, and kills all but three crewmen. 1944, Boris Berlin building burns down after being hit in an air raid during World War II. 1948, Arab-Israeli War. Egypt captures the Israeli kibbutz of Yad Mordecai, but the five-day effort gives the Israeli forces time to prepare enough to stop the Egyptian advance a week later. 1956, the first Eurovision Song Contest is held in Lugano, Switzerland. 1958, United Press International is formed through a merger of United Press and the International News Service. 1960, following the 1960 Valdivia earthquake, the largest ever recorded earthquake, Cordon Calais begins to erupt. 1961, American Civil Rights Movement. Freedom riders are arrested in Jackson, Mississippi for disturbing the peace after disembarking from their bus. 1962, Project Mercury. American astronaut Scott Carpenter orbits the Earth three times in the Aurora 7 space capsule. 1967, Egypt imposes a blockade and siege of the Red Sea coast of Israel. 1967, Belle de Jour, directed by Luis Buñuel, is released. 1976, The Judgment of Paris takes place in France, launching California as a worldwide force of production of quality wine. 1981, Ecuadorian President Jaime Roldós Aguirre and his wife and his presidential committee died in an aircraft accident while traveling from Quito to Zapotillo minutes after the president gave a famous speech regarding the May 24th anniversary of the Battle of Pichincha. 1982, liberation of Khorramshahr. Iranians captured the port city of Khorramshahr from the Iraqis during the Iran-Iraq War. 1988, Section 28 of the UK's Local Government Act of 1988, a controversial amendment stating a local authority can intentionally promote homosexuality, is enacted. 1991, Israel conducts Operation Solomon, evacuating Ethiopian Jews to Israel. 1992, the last Thai dictator, General Sushinda Kraprayun, resigns following the pro-democracy protest. 1992, the ethnic cleansing of Kozarak, Bosnia and Herzegovina, begins when the Serbian militia and police forces enter the town. 1993, Eritrea gains its independence from Ethiopia. 1993, Roman Catholic Cardinal Juan Jesus Posadas Ocampo and five others are assassinated in a shootout at Miguel Hidalgo y Costilla Guadalajara International Airport in Mexico. 1994, four men are convicted of bombing the World Trade Center in New York in 1993. Each one is sentenced to 240 years in prison. 1995, while attempting to return to Leeds Bedford Airport in the UK, Night Air Flight 816 crashes in Harewood, North Yorkshire, kills all but 12 people on board. 1999, International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia in The Hague, Netherlands, indicts Slobodan Milosevic and four others for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Kosovo. Israeli troops withdraw from southern Lebanon after 22 years of occupation. 2002, Russia and the U.S. signed the Moscow Treaty. 2014, a 6.4 magnitude earthquake occurs in the Aegean Sea between Greece and Turkey, injures 324 people. 2014, at least three people are killed in a shooting at Brussels Jewish Museum of Belgium. 2019, 22 students die in a fire in Surat, that's in India. And in 2019, under pressure over her handling of Brexit, British Prime Minister Theresa May announces her resignation as leader of the Conservative Party effective June 7th. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Aldersgate Day and also Wesley Day in Methodism. In Ecuador, it's the Battle of Pichincha Day. Bermuda Day in Bermuda celebrates the nearest weekend if May 24th falls on the weekend. Christian Feast Day, Anapaq-Aggi, one of the Korean martyrs. Donation and Rogation, Jackson Kemper in the Episcopal Church. Joanna, Mary, Help of Christians. Sarah, celebrated by the Romani people of Camargue. Vincent of Lorenz, Commonwealth Day in Belize. Earliest day in which El Colacho tradition can fall, June 27th is the latest, celebrated on Sunday after Corpus Christi. Independence Day in Eritrea celebrates independence of Eritrea from Ethiopia in 1993. Luberi Memorial Day in Bagunda. St. Cyril and the Methodius Day in Eastern Orthodox Church. Bulgarian Education, Culture, and Slavonic Literature Day in Bulgaria. St. Cyril and Methodius Slavonic Enlighteners Day in North Macedonia. Victoria Day, celebrated on Monday, on or before May 24th in Canada, and National Patriots Day in Quebec. All right, let's see what else we might have. Okay, 1086, Abbot Duferio becomes Pope Victor III. 1153, Malcolm IV becomes King of the Scots. 1276, Magnus Ludulus is crowned King of Sweden in Uppsala Cathedral. 1300, King Philip IV occupies Flanders. Earl Gwede is captured. 1370, Manzestaden signs a peace treaty with the Danish king of Valdemar IV. 1660, English King Charles II visits the Netherlands. 1667, French troops attack into southern Netherlands. 1697, English King Wilhelm III travels through northern Europe. 1755, smuggler Louis Mendrin, considered the French Robin Hood, is sentenced to be broken on the wheel, a medieval form of torture and execution that breaks the bones of the subject. 1775, on this date, John Hancock is unanimously elected president of the Continental Congress. 1815, George Evans discovers the Lachlan River in Australia. 1818, General Andrew Jackson captures Pensacola, Florida. 1822, the famous Battle of Pichincha. Simon Bolivar secures independence of Ecuador from Spain. 1824, Pope Leo XII proclaims a universal jubilee. 1829, Pope Pius VIII, who is not pious, issued his program for, pontif- for pontificate. 1830, Mary Had a Little Lamb by Sarah Josepha Hale is first published by Boston firm Marsh, Capon, and Lyon. 1830, the first regular passenger rail service on the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad line. Horse-drawn rail cars connect Baltimore to Ellicott's Mills. 1847, on this date, German explorer Ludwig Leichhardt awarded the Patron's Medal by the Royal Geographical Society in London in recognition of the increased knowledge of the great continent of Australia gained by his Moreton Bay Port Essington journey. 1854, escaped slave Anthony Burns is arrested by deputy marshals in Boston under the Fugitive Slave Act. Let's see. 1861, Union Major General Benjamin Butler, also known as Spoons Butler, declares slaves as contraband of war. 1862, the Beardsley Field Telegraph used for the first time. All right. 1862, Westminster Bridge across the Thames in London opens up. It's the second bridge after an earlier bridge fell into the Kay. 1866, Berkeley, California is named for George Berkeley, Bishop of Cloyne. 1870, memoria of Jackson Kemper, first missionary bishop in the U.S. 1873, Alexandra Palace opens on Queen Victoria's 54th birthday. There's a grand celebration including concerts, recitals, and fireworks. 1878, California Parker from Harvard wins the first American, C.A. Parker from Harvard wins the first American bike race at Beacon Park in Boston. 1881, the overloaded Canadian River ferry Princess Victoria sinks near London, Ontario. 180 people drown. 1881, Turkey cedes Thessaly and Arta back to Greece. In 83, Brooklyn Bridge is opened by President Arthur and the New York Governor Cleveland. 1884, the Anti-Monopoly Party and the Greenback Party formed the People's Party in the U.S. 1887, Sultan Bargash of Zanzibar grants East African Association at East African Harbors, access to East African Harbors. 1890, Leo von Caprivi succeeds Otto von Bismarck as Chancellor of Germany. 1890, Geo Train and Sam Wall circle the world in record 67 days, Tacoma to Tacoma. 1894, the Lowell Observatory in Arizona first begins observations of Mars with an 18-inch telescope. Leads its builder, Percival Lowell, to conclude there are canals on Mars. 1895, Henry Irving becomes the first actor to receive a knighthood. 1899 saw the opening of the first auto repair shop in Boston. 1901, 78 miners die in the Caerphilly pit disaster in South Wales. 1902, on this date, Empire Day is first celebrated in Britain. 1908, Belgium Catholic Socialist Liberal Parliamentary Election. Alrighty. In 1915, Thomas Edison invents telescribe to record telephone conversations. 1916, conscription begins in Britain. 1916, saw the French driven out of Fort Douaumont after 500 are killed or injured. Also in 16, the last British Indian contract workers arrived in Suriname. That same year, U.S. pilot William Thaw shoots down a German Fokker. 1918, British officer General Poole lands at Murmansk, the Russian port on the Barents Sea. 1921, Buholik massacre. Police commissioner Colonel Theodore Truder leads six squadrons and artillery detachment against Israelite religious sect collected at an annual gathering on land of leader Enoch Majijima at Natabalanga. 190 folks are killed. 1922, Russian-Italian trade agreement is signed. Well, let's see. 1931 saw the first air-conditioned train installed on the B&L Railroad. 1936, Dutch bishops forbid their members from being members of the Nazi Party. 1940, Dutch Queen Wilhelmina speaks on BBC Radio. She is Queen of the Netherlands. 1940, the Dutch Army demobilizes. Also in 40, German tanks reach Utrecht in France. 1943, Admiral Dönitz stops the U-boats in the Atlantic Ocean. 1943, the U-441 shoots Sunderland seaplane down over the Gulf of Biscay. 1943, the final entry in the Stroop Report detailing the destruction of the Jewish Warsaw Ghetto was compiled by Nazi officers, and it was meticulous, and it was later used as evidence in the Nuremberg trials. 1944, Enver Hoxha becomes head of Albania's anti-fascist. He also became dictator of Albania. 1944, Icelandic voters sever all ties with Denmark. 1951, racial segregation in Washington, D.C. restaurants ruled illegal. 1953, Pope Pius XII publishes the encyclical Doctor Mellifluous. He was the 260th Pope. 1954, the first rocket attains 150 miles altitude at White Sands in New Mexico. 1954, the German airline Lufthansa is formed. 1957, anti-American riots break out in Taipei, Taiwan. 1955. Alrighty, I think we've come to the end of our little history segment. You know, we've been talking about a lot of mysteries, if you will. There's also human mysteries. Now, this first story came from an individual who, it happened to him, so he wanted to remain anonymous. And he took with him a doctor, Dr. Michael Ash, who wrote several books back in the 60s. He was going to visit a neighbor of his. He called her Lady D. And she often startled everybody with the clarity of her analysis of characters and situations. And she sat down next to the individual telling the story. Dr. Ash sat on a stool in front of him. And the narrator rolled up his sleeve and put his arm on the table. Now, he had discussed what had happened previously with Dr. Ash. He'd gone around to talk with her and read her the last few pages of his book, Dr. Ash's book. When he'd finished, she'd complained. She reported a sensation of acute tingling in both her hands. And after he left her, she said that tingling spread all over her body. To such an extent, she became alarmed and sent for her own doctor. She thought she was having a heart issue, but her heart was sound as a bell. No sort of psychological disturbance, merely an inexplicable tingling from the top of her head to the tip of her toe. Now, all this may sound ridiculous, and Dr. Ash said, well, there's nothing to be afraid of. And Lady D said, I'm not in the least afraid. Now, the narrator interjected at this point and said, I think I should explain. I'm not going out of my way to help. I'm not going to struggle against it. I'm not going to push it along. And he said, he's not going to, he had laid his arm on the table, and he said, I'm trying to imagine this arm didn't belong to me. If it does anything, it'll be because it can't help doing it, not because I told it to. And then the doctor moved a little closer and stretched out his arm, and his hands were about 6 inches from the narrator's. 15 seconds later, it started happening. Regular swelling in the veins from the shoulder to the wrist. Then the twitching and the shivering of the skin all over the hand. Then the feeling of delicate bones and tissues straining to get into position. Now, the narrator again interjected at this point and said 2 years before this, he'd been nearly killed in a motor accident. And among the various injuries were a couple of broken fingers and a splintered wrist. And they weren't set at the hospital to which he was taken. When he expressed to the orthopedic surgeon his fear he might never be able to play the piano, he was told to go home and play it and not to make a fuss. After a month of agony, went to one of those people who are described by one's friends as a top man in medicine. And this top man in medicine looked at the situation and shook his head and said it's too late for him to do anything. Physiotherapy was the key. He also had hot wax baths and massage and radiant heat. And although they didn't seem to do any harm, they didn't seem to do any good either. The agony did lessen, and gradually he could use a pen to write. But he was always in pain. So here it was, his arm bare to the elbow, and the man stretching out his hands, not touching him, making no physical contact whatsoever. But in spite of that, the hand began to perform extraordinary antics. Well, he stared straight ahead. He was concentrating on not helping. In fact, it was vital that there be no question of self-hypnosis. Even more important, it had to banish from one's mind any suggestion of faith healing. Now, he didn't want to have faith. All he wanted was to be assured by any shadow of a doubt he was in a state of complete awareness and clarity of mind. That an unseen force was compelling part of his body to react in a manner so physically unmistakable that those reactions could be analyzed and measured and photographed. By the next glance he made at his hand gave me that assurance. Things were happening he couldn't possibly have achieved by his own volition. Lady D saw. The narrator heard her whisper, it's a miracle. And frankly, in his mind, it was. For the skin was vibrating like a cord of elastic after you'd stretched it, and the fingers did too. And if you're a pianist, and if your trills are up to standard, you can do some pretty fast work with your fingers. Well, now his fingers are doing what you might call a supersonic trill. and they were doing it of their own accord, with no instructions from his brain, to an unwritten music drifting down into this quiet room from someplace. Well, this went on for about 4 minutes. He'd been checking his watch because he wanted to remind himself that he was doing a job of reporting. Incidentally, there's a reporter's item in the position of the watch itself. It was on the sofa beside him. And Dr. Ashe asked him to take it off his wrist because the force that came from his hands was so powerful it made watches go haywire. Well, they were sitting in the parlor of a large Edwardian house in North London suburb of Enfield. The room was dimly lit. The walls were crowded with religious pictures, mostly New Testament. There was a pretty garden outside. The house itself belonged to two kindly ladies who'd offered it to Dr. Ashe as the headquarters for a healing seance. Well, at this point in time, Dr. Ashe was a man in his early 40s, tall and dark and, in the most literal sense, referred to as good-looking. The very last thing he suggests is any sort of crankiness or hocus-pocus. His medical record was impeccable, even though it's frequently caused a number of eyebrows to be raised in the British Medical Association. Yep, he might have been in a Turkish bath because it became very warm. He began to sweat very hard. Mental excitement? Maybe. True, he was mentally excited. He didn't have to get out a handkerchief and wipe his forehead when because he wasn't really doing anything to elicit the sweat. It was just coming of its own accord. The watch showed they'd been going for 6 minutes, and the narrator said he was physically exhausted by this point. And meanwhile, the whole arm from the shoulder to the fingertips was aching almost unbearably. And yet, remember, he wasn't moving a muscle. He was totally relaxed. But he was suffering the same sharp pains that result from an overindulgence in violent physical exercise. So he looked at Dr. Ashe and said, "Do you mind if we stop now?" Dr. Ashe dropped his hands, and as he did, the narrator's own hand gave a last flutter and came to rest. Though something had been switched off. After this, he reported that he was much, much closer to how he had been before the accident, which does bring the question, what exactly did Dr. Ashe do? That's something to which we don't have an answer. Well, it was G.K. Chesterton who said, "A thing that is worth doing at all is worth doing badly." The matters which we're discussing, of course, are a great mystery and infinite range, and even the vocabulary that's used in the telling of these stories presents unaccustomed problems, because the English language hadn't yet caught up with some of the activities of men and women who indulge in these type of activities. Consider the word radiesthesia. Although it's in its various forms been practiced for many years and has given rise to a considerable body of literature in many languages, it's not yet attained the distinction of being included in the Oxford Dictionary. There's quite a lot of activities, I guess you could say, that take place for which we actually have no rational explanation. But that makes them nonetheless valid. Let's talk about a magic rod. Now, the individual that told this story began with a slab of journalese because it's one way of keeping our feet on the ground. Prior to writing it, he spent several weeks poring over one of the most difficult of books, The Physics of the Divining Rod. He tried to digest the principles, and we got a general picture of that it was a very complex topic. The individual that was being discussed was named Professor Cecil Mabey, and not even his detractors could deny there was little to learn which Mabey hadn't learned about water divining, or dowsing as it's called. The fact that it's a 17th century word is not maybe without significance. I remember growing up, my grandmother on one occasion had to resort to using a water dowser, and he did find water. I was shocked. Now, the list of Mabey's published works on this and a lot of similar subjects is formidable and represents the concentrated research of 30 years. At an average of 70 hours a week. Fortunately, the scientific terrain for dowsing in this country is loosely defined, and sometimes studying the claims and counterclaims of the various participants, one is reminded of a group of explorers from rival countries squabbling over the correct apportionment of the uncharted jungle. It had been Mabey's work to map out that jungle to define its scientific limitations. And it may be unsurprising to learn it's with some reluctance he discusses these matters with what he refers to as the untutored. But he has tolerance for those who he feels are at least trying to understand his discoveries. We're going to first talk about the ancient black spots. Now, these emerged during a comparatively lighthearted interlude in the conversation that took place with Dr. Mabey. His mind is so pervaded by radionics, which is a very different thing from saying he's obsessed by them. He's able to perceive their application in situations where they have not even been suspected previously. In this case, he concluded that the constant recurrence of accidents in certain places in which no special element of danger was apparent might well be due to the presence of a strong undercurrent of water. To put it very simply, the arm of a tired lorry driver as he passed over this hidden stream could be subject to an invisible tug that resulted in an accident. When the narrator told Dr. Mabey this was a front page news story, he blinked and said, "Oh, really?" He didn't really have what you might call a strongly developed sense of journalistic value. Now, to illustrate his point, maybe made reference to a job of professional dowsing in a rural district. And he can read the hidden streams which flow through our lives with a greater potency for good or evil than most of us would have guessed. He seems to have an uncanny facility. He found this particular stream led him to the village forge and conducted directly under the anvil. A couple of men were working at the anvil, sweating away with their hammers, as their forefathers had done for centuries prior. Put down his dowsing rod for a moment and said, "Would you chaps like me to tell you how to make your work a good deal easier?" Well, of course they were in favor of that. "All you have to do is move this anvil over to the corner, and then..." At that point, his discussion became a little bit too technical for him. He began to chat lightly about the parallel zones of reaction in the primary radiation field, which, of course, is puzzling to most of us. Anyway, they didn't move the anvil. They preferred to go on sweating rather than listen to the meanderings of an obviously insane individual. The moral to that story? There may be many men in the world using a great deal of unnecessary energy over anvils of all sorts. Energy that might be saved by learning some of the lessons of that are entailed in a divining rod. Now, the example of using the anvil was chosen not only because it helps to keep our feet on the ground, so to speak, but also because it serves to emphasize the fact that Mabee's main task in the long course of his investigation has been proving the physical faculty of dowsing. He doesn't concern himself with the psychical faculty, as exemplified by such phenomena as map dowsing or the tracing of lost persons and corpses. And he doesn't dismiss these practices as necessarily bogus. Instead, he keeps rather more than an open mind about it, admitting it seems highly probable in some cases, the sort of cases where we will discuss later on, a cryptopsychic faculty may be utilized. Now, this admission from a man whose mind is not capable of scientific proof seems of importance. But at this point, what concerns us is his emphatic conclusion, which has never been seriously contested, that the reaction of the dowser is as plainly physical as the reaction of the electric light bulb when you turn on a switch. To put it in his own words, we think we may claim incontrovertibly to have shown that the causes of the ordinary dowsing reflexes and the rod reactions are to be found in certain penetrating electrically excitatory rays. And whether you believe that or not, something actually does react to the dowsing rod. Now, the average individual may find it necessary to study that particular claim, and it's not really as obscure as you might think. The rays masquerade under all sorts of different names and strange disguises, some of them of great dramatic interest. Meanwhile, it's enough to remind us that they do exist. All around us, everywhere, all the time. In other and lighter moments, Mabee's experimented with numerous examples of this tug that he referred to. So let's assume he's dousing a field and he finds water running at a depth of 200 feet in the northeast corner. To mark the site of this hidden stream, he drives a peg into the soil. And he walks to the other three corners where there's no water and drives in similar pegs. Then he strolls around to the pub, contacts an unsuspecting young man, and gets him to come back to the field for a little experiment. Puts a crowbar into the young man's hand and leads him to the pegs in the various corners, keeping the northeast for the last. At each peg, he requests the young man to lift the crowbar at arm's length. And, of course, he didn't have any difficulty doing it. But at the fourth corner, something's wrong. The crowbar suddenly become unaccountably heavy. The young man sweats and strains as he lifts it. It's amazing to him that he should have tired so quickly. But his condition has nothing to do with fatigue. It's the work of the Hertzian waves of geophysical or cosmic origin. In other words, the waves coming from the water pull the crowbar down. Well, now, Mabee has written several books that make fascinating reading. One of the things he discussed was electric radiations relative to growth and disease. And this chapter of his book owes something to the researchers, among others, of a French engineer named Lakovsky, who did much to stimulate interest in the question of certain, he referred to them as noxious terrestrial rays. He claims these rays were a factor in aggravating cancer and in all probability a number of the other diseases such as asthma, tuberculosis, rheumatism in its various forms. And to say that maybe accepts his claim as conclusively proved would be going a little bit too far, but he regards it as a valuable working hypothesis. And he also seems to think it's not impossible that Klosky was onto something when he maintained that these noxious rays could be screened away from human beings by means of certain neutralizing devices. And in this connection, he quotes the work of another French scientist, Lebrégeri, and his researches on the effects of copper when worn in close and constant contact with the human skin. To many superior persons, the copper bracelet is a gadget, a social toy, a badge of childish superstition. I remember John Wayne wore a copper bracelet for most of his life, and until he was exposed to the nuclear testing, he seemed to live a charmed life. Well, does dowsing work? Yes, I've watched it work. Now, the gentleman that I watched was probably 10, and he looked to me to be older than Methuselah. But he used his dowsing rod and went right straight to water in an area where I was positive there was no water. Well, there are quite a number of mysteries that deal with various rays, so to speak, such as Orgon. And then those that swear by them, and that there are those that laugh at them. The problem is, there's no way to test for them. Now, if we're struggling with material that strains our limited intellectual capacities, sometimes it's good to just stop and smell the roses, so to speak. Now, with the exception of Dr. Ash that we talked about at the beginning of this segment, who used naked hands to channel what he called a force, like a stream of healing light, most of those who work with these mysterious forces use some kind of device. Even the dowser uses a forked stick. One of the most famous was Mesmer. Mesmer's bucket was a sort of artificial pool filled with bottles of magnetized water, connected with silver cords that were held by his patients during treatment. Now, this had all the outward trappings of showmanship, but showmanship does have its place in therapy. Maybe he had the elaborate instruments through which he channels his natural gift of water divining. Dr. Reich, who came up with Orgon, had the organoscope. Eamon had a contraption of copper wires. But there are also those who their body is the way they channel that energy. Now, there's a story that was brought to me. Years ago, my parents owned a motel, and there was a cottage on the motel property set away from everything else. It was rented by a gypsy family, and they had a daughter that was just my age. Cute as a button. And she told fortunes using an ordinary deck of playing cards. And she told my fortune, and everything she said has come to pass. She also told me about pendulum dowsing, where you have a pendulum in your right hand and some kind of pointer in your left, and you take a map. And whatever you're looking for, you get that idea in your mind, and then you use that pointer to go over the map. And as you get closer and closer to the spot you should be searching, the pendulum gets faster. Now, the pendulum is employed only by those whose approach might be regarded as scientific, though they're usually inclined to regard it as some of the crude method of transmission. The interesting thing about people like the young lady that I knew and who could find things using dowsing and tell people's fortunes with unbelievable accuracy, they don't seem to be able to profit from these things themselves. Others do. I've been an amateur treasure hunter since I was old enough to walk. And during the time we were there, I found enough on the beach to buy my first metal detector. And then I had fun. But you have to know where to use the metal detector. Now, this next story that was told by a gentleman, he said, on a previous night, he'd been feeling intensely depressed. So much so, he thought of putting off two friends who were coming to have dinner with him. A distant cousin in his 860s and a young pianist who wanted an opinion on some of his compositions. But they couldn't be reached by telephone, so they came anyway. And he was pretty sure he was not the greatest of company. After dinner, the young man played, and he followed him by improvising on some of his themes. And it made things worse because the narrator had a talent for improvising. When it was over, the young man said to us, "A criminal that nothing is done about music such as you've just been playing." Now, he replied with a number of bitter remarks about the music publishing business and the fame and fortune gained by composers who hadn't a bar of melody in them. Well, due to the negative nature of his outlook at that point in time, he made some very disparaging remarks about his own abilities, to which his cousin chimed in and said, "Well, that's not true. You've always said you're hopeless, but you still managed to produce something." Well, when the two left, he put through a long-distance call to Dr. Westlake with the intention of canceling the appointment he had with him tomorrow. He'd throw the whole thing up, start a novel, write some sketches, practice scales, anything but continue with this back-breaking job. But there was no job. There was no reply, so he went to bed and took a sleeping pill. Well, next day he felt a little bit better. He could put on an act and pretend to be cheerful. And when he got to Dr. Westlake's in the afternoon, he found the doctor had been forced to step out for an hour. His wife was there, a very charming woman with an engaging smile and wholesome as apple dumpling, as he remarked. She showed him around the premises, which were beautiful. Lived on the outskirts of a rambling holiday camp which Westlake had created on lands bequeathed to him by his father. All around him were giant firs in which the wind was playing a long, winding melody. While they were waiting for the doctor, Ms. Westlake said, "Is there anything I can show you?" And he said, "Do you ever take part in his experiments?" She said, "Sometimes, in a mild way. He seems to think I have some talent with the pendulums." And said, "Well, can I see you do it?" Of course. At least it can't do any harm. And they went back in the house and sat down at the table. She put some items out on the table and she picked them up and put it on an item from the box that she had sat on the table and sat it out. I made an adjustment on the scale. The interesting thing about pendulum dowsing, as they call it, and Westlake explained this in great detail to the narrator, someone who has some ability in that can literally find anything. In fact, a friend of mine, unfortunately, who's dead now, had a friend who was a known psychic medium, and she found a lost gold mine. Okay, well, I'm getting so many calls today. We're going to bring this show to a halt right now. We'll be back tomorrow and talk more about folks with supernatural abilities. Till then, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.